Hi, welcome to More Than a Song. Our show's focus is on West Texas music singers and songwriters, off stage and on the air. We'll have behind-the-music conversations, exploring their life, their songs, the creative process, and more. I'm your host, Kerry Banks, with producer Chuck Luck. Today, we'll be talking with Darby Sparkman. Welcome to More Than a Song.
Hello.
Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thank you.
You were not born in Texas, but you got here as quick as you could.
Yes, I was born in Altus, Oklahoma, but they got me to Quanah pretty darn quick.
Quanah, Texas.
Quanah, Texas.
How did you get started playing music in Quanah, Texas?
So I have the same old Southern story as everybody else. My grandma played the piano at church. My great aunt was the choir director. Just from a super young age, you're at church every Sunday and every Wednesday night, and they're playing music. I was always sitting on the organ bench with my grandma or hanging out in the choir loft with my aunt. And then the piano player at church, when I was probably in the first grade, was like, well, I'll give you piano lessons. And so that's kind of how I got started actually playing music. Everyone that is an artist says this, but I was singing before I could talk. You know, my parents had a piano. I was always banging on the piano before I knew how to play. So
when did you know the realization that, hey, I think I can do this?
Yeah, so there's a little town outside of Quanah called Goodlett. In their old high school gymnasium, when I was really little, a lady owned it and she called it the Pease River Playhouse. During the summer, like every other Saturday, they would have really tiny concerts of people coming through. I just remember watching those people play and I was like, if someone put me on stage, I'm pretty confident that I could like do it. That's kind of where it started.
Do you remember the first song that you sang on stage?
Yes, it was at Christmas at church. You know, every church does a Christmas special. When I was probably 6 or 7, she was like, well, why don't you come sing in our Christmas special, sing with the choir and do a solo? Now that we're talking about it, I don't remember exactly the song, a little kid song that a little kid could sing. So I'm going to assume it was Silent Night.
When did you pick up other instruments?
The summer between 4th and 5th grade. I begged my mom, please, please let me have a guitar. And that's when Miranda Lambert, no woman was bigger than her in country music at that time. And I was like, well, she can play guitar, you know, all this kind of stuff. And my mom was like, listen, I'm going to tell you really honestly, you've been taking piano lessons since you were in the first grade. And I'm not confident that you know how to play the piano. So I'm not going to buy you another instrument. How about you just stick to the piano? So I got on her Facebook page. Of course, I was a child, so I didn't have one, but I got on her page and I was like, if anyone at Quanah has a guitar, Darby wants one. And a neighbor that lives just a couple houses over came by the house and was like, hey, I bought this guitar for my son years ago, still in the box, never opened. I mean, it was a Christmas gift that got overlooked by toys. I'll give it to you for $20. And I was like, cool. And my mom, she's a teacher. So she came home that day and she was like, where did you get that? And I'm like, I got it on Facebook. And she was like, Darby, when I get home tomorrow, you better know how to play a song. This is ridiculous. And I was like, okay. I learned a Miranda Lambert song. I'm sure I watched a video on YouTube or Googled, how do you play guitar? You know, whatever. I've been playing ever since.
You also recently picked up the banjo.
When I went to South Plains and mentor, speaking of mentors, Steve Williams, Steve Guitar Williams, he talked me into playing the dobro. I loved it so much. As the ways of being a musician goes, everyone gets their gear stolen at least once in their life, out of a car or a trailer or something. And when I was about 17 or 18, both of my acoustics and my dobro got stolen out of my car in downtown Lubbock. And so I had to tell Steve, hey, our lessons have been going great, but I'm not going to be at lessons this week because someone stole my guitar. And he was like, yeah, it happens to the best of us. When Adam and I got married and we were talking about my dreams of my stance in the music industry are changing just a little bit. And so I was like, I really want to be a better instrumentalist. I need to go past piano, guitar, and then I can also play ukulele, which is something I did when I was younger. I was like, but I've always wanted to play the banjo. I got a package from Sweetwater about 2 weeks later. It had a brand new banjo in it. I'm not a great guitar player. My hands don't move that way. I don't know how they do it so fast, but I'm slowly learning banjo. Same thing with dobro. I just recently got a new dobro and I've been relearning, reacquainting myself with the instrument as well. So I'm going to have a whole bluegrass band here pretty soon.
And you wound up going to school early on at South Plains College in the commercial music program.
The state of Texas has a program that's offered to high school children who are down on their luck a little bit. They're just trying to finish high school, or maybe an early family is happening and you're going to have to be a parent, not a high school student. And somehow I weaseled my way into that program. And so I graduated high school when I was 16. I never had a senior year. I went through junior year and then I graduated with the seniors ahead of me. So I skipped a whole year of high school and I moved to Lubbock and went to South Plains. My vocal coach was Allie Maddox. I was in all of Jay Lemon's ensembles.
And you took songwriting.
I did. I had already been writing songs for a very long time, but that was the very first time that it was introduced to me that songwriting is something that you can study. There's a ginormous learning curve. It's not just like, oh, my brain makes up these words, let's write a song. It's like you really do study it and you really can hone your craft. It's something that you have to work at. And that was the first time in my life that I realized that people like John Prine and Paul McCartney and or whoever else that we revere is like, oh, wow, they're pretty good songwriters. They didn't just wake up one day and start writing those songs. It was bookwork and worksheets and tons of really horrible, crappy songs that we've never heard before. And then we just happened to hear those 50 or 100 songs that they got out of their entire life that we think are good. That was the first time I really realized that.
Do we have a song from your early period that we could listen to? Some of your early writing?
Yes, there's a song on my very first EP called Slow Songs and Cigarettes that I actually recorded in A-Cuff with Alan Crossland called Drink with Jones. It's the very first time I wrote a song where I was like, wow, I think this could play on the radio. So you guys enjoy.
They say it takes a lot to be a good man. You gotta know when to run and know when to stand. You gotta pick your battles and win your race. Be sure
back to continue our conversation with Darby Sparkman on More Than a Song on 89.1. Welcome back to More Than a Song. Our guest today is singer-songwriter Darby Sparkman. Talk about some of your early professional gigs.
I'll go way, way back. My very, very first gig, I was 12 years old, and it was at the Rusty Spur in Seymour, Texas. From then, I just kept getting gigs. I was a high school cheerleader. I did play sports, and it was like, well, what are you doing after the game tonight? Well, I got a gig, so I'll see y'all later. You know what I mean? Like, I've got shows to play or gigs to play. And then when I moved to Lubbock, I was introduced to the Blue Light, which, of course, as a sheltered panhandle kid, if you can get booked at the Blue Light in Lubbock as a young songwriter, it's like, you've made it. You've absolutely made it. Which is funny, looking back on now as an older adult, I'm like, well, I don't know about that. But Songwriter Night on Monday nights with Jerry Serrano, I got invited to go there a couple of times, but I was not old enough to get in when I moved to Lubbock. I had just turned 17. You got to be 21 to get into the Blue Light. I shook some hands and kissed some babies and basically said, if you will just let me in, you can hold my hand and make sure I don't get out of line one bit. I mean, I'll be done with South Plains before I even turn 18. And thankfully, either they trusted me enough as a person or they believed in my talent and didn't mind that I played on their stage. I'm not really sure, but they allowed me in. And so I started playing every Monday night. That turned into, well, you know, we have a guy playing on Tuesday. If you want to open for him, sure, I'll play on a Tuesday. In the summer, the Blue Light had a girls' night out, and it was four girls song swapping an earlier evening show. And I started getting invited to play girls' night out. And I was like, wow, I've made it to Thursday night. And then Ross Cooper, who is an incredible songwriter, he lives in Nashville now. He was playing on a Saturday night and he called me. I know you play Blue Light a lot, but we've got a Saturday night spot if you want to open for us. And so I put together a band. It was the very first time I'd played with a band outside of South Plains, of course. And I finally got to play Blue Light on a Saturday night, not because of me, but it was a sold out show. And it was absolutely incredible. And I remember thinking, like, is it really this easy? Like, someone just shoots you a text message and then you're playing a sold out show. Like, is this really how it works? That is not how it works. That doesn't happen. That's very rare. But since then, I've played with Ross several more times. I've played with the Bellamy brothers, Gene Watson, songwriters like Adam Hood and Courtney Patton and Jason Eady. And then my husband works with the band Mike and the Moonpies. I've never played with them, but I see what they do and I'm with them a lot. And so it's just awesome how things grow and how you get to be part of this group that really is more of like a family instead of the 17-year-old that they're like, well, I guess we'll let you in. You know what I mean? It's just kind of blossomed into something bigger.
Your husband, Adam Oder, is a Grammy-winning producer, musician, arranger, engineer. He is your producer.
Yes.
Walk us through what it's like working with a Grammy-winning producer recording your original songs.
Well, first of all, they're all crazy. I want everyone to know that. They've lost their minds, which is, I think, how the art is so good, because they are just completely unhinged from reality. I'll tell y'all how we met first. When I was a student at South Plains, above all, he's an incredible bass player, which is how he's become such an incredible arranger and yada, yada, yada. Him and Dave Percival, who is his business partner, they had a band called the Saints Analog, and they came to South Plains during seminar week to give a seminar and then play for the students. That's how we met. Several years later, we connected and started dating and got married. But anyway, we had just been dating for a little over 3 or 4 months when he invited me to go spend a week with him in Nashville. And he was like, I have meetings to go to. I think there's a lot of people that would be interesting in meeting a really young, pretty songwriter. They always need another person. So just come on with me. While we were there, we were staying in this one-room studio cabin on a creek right outside of Nashville. And he was like, while we're here, why don't we go ahead and start writing some songs together and get ready to make a record? And I'm like, that sounds awesome. That sounds so good. And then the more we started working that whole week we were there, he was like, I have an idea. What if when we finish writing these songs and picking what we want to record, why don't we just set up a microphone and your guitar? And why don't we just record an acoustic EP here? That's kind of how it happened. The record is called The Cabin at Ghost Gum Creek. I had a whole notebook full of ideas or one-liners or half-finished songs that I was like, this could be good, but my brain is done writing it. So maybe somebody else can come in and help me finish it. That's exactly what we did. We picked 4 songs out of the 10 or 15 that we had written. We just kind of recorded them down, kind of 1 or 2 takes. It wasn't highly produced as far as like the whole enchilada of making a record goes. There's no punches, there's no overdubs, there's no rough vocals, nothing. You either get it or you don't get it. As someone who wants to be a songwriter, it's super important to show your songs at the absolute bare minimum, because if they can sound even a little bit decent with nothing, then someone can make them sound grand.
Let's hear The Cabin at Ghost Creek.
Yeah.
Way back down in the woods of the south, there stands a big tall tree. Underneath there's a stone with the words carved out, The Cabin at Ghost Gum Creek. The story goes there was a dark-haired girl with a daddy as mean as a snake. Her charming eyes were enough to make even the toughest boy bend and break. There's a trail that leads right down to the creek. You can see it when the moon is full. Every night right around 10 o'clock, footprints were left and innocence was fooled. Now daddy was a trapper, the dog was a tracker, the two made a hell of a pair. He started howling when he picked up a scent of the girl with the long black hair. The dog's nose hit the dirt and he turned around, he was hot on the trail. They were headed back up that winding road that the trapper knew. Story is really good, stay quiet as a mouse. The dog led daddy past the big tall tree to the front door of their family's house. Not really sure what was going on, he crept right through the door. With whispers on his feet and fear in his eyes, he loaded up his 44. A scream and a bark and a shot in the dark, he aimed for the head of the bed, where the dark-haired lady and a newfound love lay cold in a sheet of red. Legend says he only took one shot, but I guess that's all it takes to tear down hearts that are tangled up in a bed somebody else has made. Under a lonely moon with a golden gloom, he got tied up in sin. Now the hound's all alone and the family was never seen again. A big tall tree. Underneath there's a stone with the words carved out for the cabin echoes Gum Creek. For the cabin echoes Gum Creek.
We'll be right back to continue our conversation with Darby Sparkman on More Than a Song on 89.1. Welcome back to More Than a Song. We're speaking today with Darby Sparkman. Tell us about your experience with the West Texas music community.
I am so grateful to be considered a part of the West Texas music scene and the West Texas music community. And I've been around Lubbock and playing in Lubbock, like I said, since I was 16. And I've had the great fortune of running into tons of people who Lubbock is not quite their stomping ground anymore, but it was when they were getting started. Really big names that people know, like Wade Bowen, the Flatland guys, John Bauman, William Clark Green, Dalton Domino, who cut their teeth at Blue Light, and they kind of erupted into this scene, which is now coined as Texas country or Texas music. But when you go down deeper than that, it really started with the Flatlanders. and the Maynes brothers. You could even go all the way back to Buddy Holly. The reason I came to Lubbock in the first place was because every single person that I knew off the top of my head that was potentially considered a good songwriter, somehow they had been in Lubbock at one point or another, or were connected to somebody that was in Lubbock. And I was like, if I can just get to Lubbock, I can figure out my way into this grander scene. But it's funny, no matter how far you travel, how far you go, whether you're in California or Florida, Nashville, New York City, or all the way in the UK, dang if it doesn't always lead back to West Texas. You always meet somebody that's like, oh yeah, I was in Lubbock. Yeah, I saw Terry Allen play in 19, you know, whatever. And I'm like, how are you connected that way? So I'm just really grateful to be a name on a long list of really talented people that consider the Panhandle in West Texas and Lubbock in this area their home base for music.
You are working on a new project with your husband, Adam, going to be marketed extremely more creatively than most products.
We all know about concept records. I had this idea for a concept record about the Dust Bowl. I met this really amazing woman who I love. Her name is Summer Dean. And she also was like, I've always wanted to do a concept record about the Dust Bowl. Well, you know what? I'm going to get started. I'm going to try to write at least one song that I kind of like a little bit. And then if it's good, I'll keep going. If it's not good, I'll shift gears. So I got one song down and then I kind of put it in my back pocket and didn't really think about it for a very long time. When I rediscovered that song, it meant something completely just off the wall different than what I had originally written it for. And there's a song on the EP, The Cabin at Ghost Grim Creek. We just listened to it. It was the very first time that I'd written a song that was based around an event or a character, more of like a story. And I was like, what if I made a whole entire record, song after song? It was all just one story of different perspectives, kind of leaning more back on That's the Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, Vicki Lawrence or Fancy, Bobby Gentry, or songs like that, or any Marty Robbins song for that matter, but where it wasn't just a song, it was an entire record. Although it was different songs, it's all sequenced to be one long song. So I just started writing it. When the story got finished, I brought it to my husband and I was like, I have this really wacky idea. What if we make a record that's one long song and it's all one story and its name is Darling of the Dust? I'm ready. Let's do it. And so him and Mike Harmeyer of Mike and the Moonpies, we went into the studio and got this record recorded. After we recorded the record, we were listening to it. And I was like, I'm very proud of the piece of art I created. It's not very commercial friendly. There's no radio single. There's no hit song. There's not a catchy riff. How the heck are we going to sell this to people? And then I was like, hold on. It's a story. And I want people to be able to see the story. What if we made a film, basically a long form music video, that when you press play on the record and press play on the movie, the whole story unfolds in front of you? We've gotten started on that, which is a really fun process. So instead of marketing this record the way that most people do through radio promoters and things like that, we're going film direction and we're going to do film festivals and see what happens. I believe in the story enough to think that it could really be an entire movie or some sort of Western series of some sort on the television. Or maybe it's just going to be a really long music video and it will have been fun to have made, but it's really cool and I'm really excited. I don't know when it's going to come out. The world of making a movie is not the same as recording a record, and I'm learning that, but it's something I'm spending a lot of time and effort and money on at the moment, and I'm really excited about it. So,
and tell us one more time the title of this.
It'll be called Darling of the Dust.
We like to feature here on More Than a Song our artists doing a song live in the studio. What song are you going to do today?
I wrote it to break up with somebody. It's a breakup song. It's called Somewhere Between. I'm somewhere between Fort Worth and Amarillo, and that's all right with me. Geographically in Texas, halfway point between Fort Worth and Amarillo is Quanah, Texas. I love this song, and I love playing it live, and it's my one song that when I play live, every now and then people in the crowd, I see them singing it. Now, whether they knew it was my song or not, they still knew the words, and that's a pretty cool experience to have when someone in the crowd is singing your words back to you.
Let's give it a listen.
Well, the words, they fell out of my mouth. I didn't coming back. You don't have nothing to say that'll make me want you back. I don't know how far I'll make it, but I know where I don't want to be. I'm somewhere between Fort Worth and Amarillo, and it's all right by me.
Darby Spartman, thank you so much for being on More Than a Song.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to More Than a Song. I'm your host, Kerry Banks. This show was produced by Chuck Luck. Today, our guest was singer-songwriter Darby Spartman. Join us next Friday morning for More Than a Song at 10:30 on 89.1. For more information, and if you would like to hear previous episodes of More Than a Song, visit ttupublicmedia.org.